Today is Friday, August the 30th, and this is Kathy, and I will be reading the Rantoul Press for you for the week of August the 28th, starting with the front page, Half Century of Progress Farm Show, the largest show ever. Ideal weather and word of mouth help show to keep growing by Dave Hinton. John Fredrickson turned off the alarm on his alarm clock Sunday night in his Rantoul motel room wherein he retired for the night. He intended to sleep in. No need to get up at 4 in the morning for the co-chairman of the Half Century of Progress Farm Show. No more 16-hour days. The show concluded a successful 4-day run Sunday, and Fredrickson was wanting to catch up on some needed sleep. It wouldn't happen. His body clock was still on rooster crowing time. Still, Fredrickson was glad to take it easier after a whirlwind half week. It was like getting out of jail, Fredrickson joked, of not having to be the answer man for hundreds of phone calls from prospective showgoers questioning how the weather was in Rantoul to whether they could bring their dog. The show is staged by the I&I Antique Tractor and Gas Engine Club with help from the village of Rantoul. Fredrickson co-chaired the show with Russell Buer. Ideal weather, meaning no rain and mild temperatures, helped to make it the largest show ever. We had a great show, Fredrickson said. The weather was beautiful. We couldn't have ordered it any better. By visual observation, Friday was the largest crowd we've ever had. We had the most farm equipment we've ever had. It was a wonderful show. I've never had so many compliments of something I've done in my life as the last couple of days. Russell and I are very elated at the outcome. He said one couple from Minnesota who sell embroidered shirts and jackets and other attire told Fredrickson they made more money at Half Century than at any other venue in the past 15 years. All the vendors were very pleased, Fredrickson said. People came from across the country, and Fredrickson said 7 or 8 people came from overseas. One of those from out of state was Travis King of Salt Lake, Mississippi, who said he was at the show for the first time after being told about it by his nephew. King said he grew up on a farm but went on to make his living doing carpentry work. It's interesting, King said of the show at midday Friday while taking a break to eat. He said he and his family members pulled into the showgrounds about 8 a.m. and had seen demonstrations of pulling corn, plowing, and disking. Jim Love of Jamestown, Indiana said it was his second time at the show and he liked all the exhibits, especially the plowing and all the harvesting exhibits. They ought to do the show more than once every other year, Love said. For Jim Love's brother, Jerry, it marked the third straight visit to Half Century. It's a nice show, he said. It gives me an opportunity to kind of reminisce on some of the old stuff. A guy was throwing corn in the wagon. I helped him and made my nephews and son do it. We picked corn today. Some of the older machinery that is older than I ever remember is out there working. The ear corn pickers and the pull-type combines, which I barely remember. There was one other noticeable thing for Jerry King, the preferred mode of transportation around the large airport site. I said there's more of these ATVs out here than there is farm equipment. Today, many brooms are made with plastic fibers. In the early days, however, they were made with broom corn for bristles. Robert Henderson of Casey and John Spanigal of Hildago showed part of the process of making brooms the old-fashioned way. Henderson exhibited a broom corn thresher that separates the seeds from the grown product, which is then dried and baled. The thresher, which was built in 1918 in Galesburg, was formerly owned by his father and restored in 2018. Spanigal, meanwhile, showed show visitors how a broom is made from broom corn. The corn grown at the Half Century Show was pretty green due to its late planting this year caused by an excessively rainy spring. Fredrickson said there were in excess of 100 volunteers who helped at the show. Planning for the event between the I&I and the village personnel began months in advance for the event held at the Rantoul National Aviation Center. Eric Vences, airport manager, said this marked the first year there was a command post at the show to coordinate EMS, fire, security, and parking. I&I hired people to direct the parking after learning a couple of years ago that counting on volunteers to do that work is not a good idea. He said it takes a great many people working together to put on something as big as the show. Vences, a village administrator, Scott Eisenhower, was at the site nonstop. He was learning everything. His presence was beneficial. The organizers appreciated it, and it was a nice morale booster to the staff that were working, Vences said. It also marked the first time both airport runways were closed before and during the event. Until 2017, one runway had been kept open until the day of the event. Not that we've had any incidents, but to increase safety, we decided to close both runways a little bit earlier, Vences said. Mitch Suits, a volunteer assistant fire chief, said the event went on without any major incidents. Firefighters were on site during the entire show. Suits, who was on site during the entire event with help from a rotating crew of firefighters, worked closely with INI officials to make sure that every field where demonstrations were ongoing were covered by fire personnel. They were also on site during every night of the tractor pulls, which ended between 8:30 and 9:30 each evening. Rantoul Police Lieutenant Justin Bowes said at its peak there were 12 officers on duty at the show. It varied depending on the time of day, Bowes said. In the morning, when the main traffic pattern was in, is when more officers were on duty, as well as during the tractor pulls. Almost every officer at some point had a post out there at the show. Friday marked the heaviest traffic day as vehicles backed up on U.S. 45 to Chandler Road. We were able to work through it, Bowes said. As far as the event grounds, we didn't have any issues. We had 3 minor medical calls, none of which required ambulance transport, he said. Lieutenant Alex Meyer was on the scene from 5 a.m. to around 9 p.m. Thursday and Friday, while Bowes was on duty that same time Saturday, and the two each did a little bit on Sunday, Bowes said. Things will remain relatively quiet on the airport grounds until this fall, when the crowds return for the first Pumpkin Chunkin' event. The event was publicized with a pumpkin catapult that was on display during the farm show. And another front page article, new chamber director hired. Amanda Vickery is the new Rantoul Area Chamber of Commerce Executive Director. The Chamber Board announced the hiring on Monday. A native of Shipshawana, Indiana, Vickery moved to Danville, where she worked for the City of Danville from 2015 to 2019. She earned an associate degree from Danville Community College. She was a co-founder of the First Fridays in downtown Danville, developed themes for each month, and brought hundreds of people to the downtown area. She said she feels it is important to develop relationships with the business owners and to help them promote their businesses throughout the area. Michael Fox, president of the Chamber Board of Directors, said the board feels that she brings experience and skills that can help the business community thrive. She wants the Chamber members to feel as though the Chamber is their greatest resource and knows that it will take a lot of hard work and dedication, Fox said. However, she is ready to take on the task. She will be setting regular office hours in the future. Vickery said that she was told about the opening by Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower. He's always been a great mentor, and I've always respected him a lot, Vickery said of Eisenhower. I'm excited about the job. She said she enjoys the Chamber of Commerce promotions type of work. I didn't realize that this was a passion of mine until a little later than most people do, she said. Vickery said she has a son who is 5. I really want him to grow up in a place like Rantoul, she said. I grew up in a small town. I want him to have that small town feel with great people. We do all that kind of fun stuff together. I put being a mom high on the list of things I enjoy doing. Vickery succeeds Belinda Allen, who left in June to take a position in Western Illinois. The Chamber will host a meet and greet time for Vickery from 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, September 12th at the Chamber office at 120 East Sangamon Avenue. And in news from Rantoul Township High School, one thing led to another. Community helped to welcome students. Rantoul Township High School Principal Todd Wilson had been wanting to hold a welcome back to school events for several years. Last Monday, it happened. The community was invited to come out and give the welcome. Wilson told of the impetus for the event. I was re-energized by a conference I went to this summer about school culture and climate. One of the speaker's catchphrases was, "We need to make the positive so loud that the negative is almost impossible to hear." Another speaker talked about telling your own story as a school. He said, "Education is not broke, we are just not in charge of the story. Shine a light." Wilson said he thought the event would shine a positive light on RTHS and the community. "First, I saw a post on Facebook by one of the Army recruiters who comes to our school. I reached out to him first to ask if he wanted to come and bring some of the other recruiters," Wilson said. "Those guys love to be in the schools to support the kids. Next, I thought I would invite some first responders as well, so I reached out to Jeremy Lawson to see if he could rally some firefighters. Then came the police department. I asked Superintendent Scott Amerio to spread the word of the Exchange Club and Rotary as well. When the event drew closer, I started putting more information on social media." Wilson said he was thankful for all the people who showed up. "We had parents and other relatives, retired teachers, board members, and so many others from the community who just showed up and gave the kids a boost as they walked in. It's important for our kids to know that people care for them and support them. This headline, Cross-Country Trip Aimed to Help Those with Disabilities, by Dave Hinton. Rantoul native Justin Brown was not an avid bicyclist, so riding for 2,800 miles cross-country was kind of a shock to the system. Brown and fellow members of the Pi Kappa Phi fraternity pedaled from San Francisco to Washington, D.C. on the Journey of Hope, a national project designed to raise money for and awareness of people with disabilities. "I enjoyed it, but I'm definitely glad to not be on my bike for a little bit," said Brown, speaking from Macomb, the home of Western Illinois University, where recently started his senior year majoring in political science. Brown said many of the people with disabilities on the route avidly look forward to the visits each year, but he said he got as much out of the experience as they did. "Some will be so upset when you have to leave that they cry or give you like 10 hugs," Brown said. "It's definitely given me a new perspective on myself and the world and my university. That's part of what the experience is supposed to do. These people that I've met have impacted me just as much as I have impacted them." Brown and his fellow cyclists heard the stories of many of the experiences of what people they visited have gone through. "A lot of people think they aren't able or capable to do what you or I are able to do," he said. "Just seeing the positivity that a lot of them have, they still have a smile on their face and are super excited and live life to the fullest." The group of bicyclers stopped each day at camps designed for people with disabilities and helps to raise money for grants to camps for the disabled. That experience helped to motivate Brown on the 63-day journey. Brown said there were times during the trip when he wouldn't have minded taking a break or being elsewhere, but the minute you get to some of these organizations and see the smiles, or when they see you across the room and run to you, it makes it all worthwhile, he said. Brown and the others who were not avid cyclists took part in a 5-month training regimen in January to take part in the trip, which started June 9th and ended August 10th. The regimen included a lot of cycling and strength exercises that work on the legs and the core muscles. 29 people were a part of Brown's route, with 7 of those being support individuals. There were one of 3 routes that totaled 86 people. The cyclists typically rode in a pace line of 3 to 5. They started at different times of the day, but the pace lines tried to stay within 10 miles of one another. They averaged 75 miles a day, although some days it got up to 125 miles. "Typically at the end of each day, we would do a friendship visit with an organization who has a similar mission to what we had," Brown said. It wasn't all work. There were some off days in which they participated in friendship visits with various organizations. Activities such as wheelchair softball games, dance parties, and water balloon fights brought out the smiles. "We helped people travel," Brown said, including one stop in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, where they took a group of wheelchair-bound residents down a trail to a waterfall that they'd never visited before. The trip created memories that Brown said will last a lifetime. A lot of them wait a whole year for us to come back and are excited when we get back into town. Brown especially enjoyed seeing areas of the country he'd never visited, most of them out west. And going by bike on a 2-lane highway or back roads provided a greater experience than traveling by car on interstate highway, said Brown, who was struck by the beauty of the route. Brown didn't mind one bit having to bike up mountain roads in Colorado, which he said was probably the favorite part of the trip. "Seeing the snow peaks was a thrill," he said. "People were still skiing in the mountains in July. We went through a ski resort and snow was everywhere. And just being able to go to the top of that peak, 12,000 feet up, and seeing for miles." Brown, who traveled with his bike to San Francisco by plane, was met in D.C. by his parents, Tony and Beth Brown. Police gave the cyclists an escort and blocked the road for them up to the U.S. Capitol. The Browns were all able to attend a Journey for Hope banquet in D.C. with their son. Although Brown said he isn't likely to cycle cross-country again for the cause, he said he will continue to advocate and share the message about the value of people with disabilities. "It's important to do what we can in our local communities," he said. "I met a lot of guys along the way who were supporting us who did this bike trip 15 and 20 years ago." And now turning to the area obituaries. Louise Bullock. Louise Bullock, 92, of Urbana, formerly of Newman, and mother of a Rantoul resident, died at 5:18 a.m. Friday, August 23rd, at the Newman Rehabilitation and Health Care Center in Newman. Funeral services were at 11 a.m. Tuesday at Joins Funeral Home in Newman, with Steve Allen officiating. Burial was in the Newman Cemetery. Dan Cole. On August 20th, Dan Cole's work on this earth was finished. He was sent to meet his Savior at Carl Hospital in Champaign, Illinois, while being surrounded by his loving family. The funeral service was held on Saturday, August 24th, at the First Baptist Church in Glenwood Drive in Rantoul. Reverend Danny Yeager officiated. The family greeted friends and relatives prior to the service. There was a visitation on Friday, August 23rd, also at the church. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, August 31st, at the First Baptist Church of Moline, on 29th Street in Moline, Illinois. William Haley. William Mike Haley, 42, of Potomac, died at 10:32 a.m. Wednesday, August 21st, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Memorial services were at 11 a.m. Saturday at the Potomac Community Center in Potomac. Deborah Harper. Debbie Harper, 58, of Mansfield, mother of a Rantoul resident, died at 12:05 p.m. Friday, August 16th, at home. A private family memorial service and private family interment will be held at a later date at the Mansfield Cemetery. Ruby Jacobs. Ruby Jacobs, 97, of Rantoul, died at 1:45 a.m. Friday, August 23rd, at Country Health Care and Rehab in Gifford. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton. Becky Lansford Little. Becky C. Lansford Little, 63, of Zephyr Hills, Florida, niece of two Rantoul residents, died August 13th in the Haley Cove Hospice Unit of the VA Hospital in Tampa, Florida. A celebration of life will be held at September 22nd, Mount Dora American Legion Post 35 in Mount Dora, Florida. On January 19th, 2020, a celebration of life will be held at the American Condominium Park in Zephyr Hills, where she and her parents lived. Burial will be at a later date in Monticello. Daniel Mowry. Daniel Mowry, 89, of St. Joseph, father of a Fisher resident, died at 5:50 a.m. Sunday, August 18th, at the Meadowbrook Health Center in Urbana. Funeral services were at 11 a.m. Thursday at Freezy Funeral Home in St. Joseph. The Reverend Chuck Alt officiated. Burial was in Grand View Memorial Gardens in rural Champaign. Arthur McElwee. Arthur McElwee, 89, of Champaign, who attended Armstrong High School, died at 10:13 p.m. Wednesday, August 21st, at OSF Medical Center in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, September 7th, at Freezy Funeral Home on Grand Avenue in St. Joseph. The Reverend Dale Deneal will officiate. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Clara Short. Clara Short, 82, of Portland, Oregon, formerly of Gifford, died Sunday, August 11th. A celebration of life will be at 2 p.m. September 14th at Gethsemane Lutheran Church on Southeast Market Street in Portland. Pamela Spivey. Pamela, or Pam Nally Spivey, 62, of Rantoul, died Thursday, August 22nd at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana, after a long battle with cancer. At her request, no services will be held as her body was donated to science for cancer research. Jeanette Winder. Jeanette M. Winder, 83, of Buckley, mother of a Paxton resident, died at 2:20 a.m. Saturday, August 24th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Pells. Funeral services were at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 28th at Our Savior Lutheran Church on St. Jones Street in Milford, with the Reverend Carl Gibbs officiating. Burial followed at St. John's Cemetery in Buckley. And now back to the news. School budget $116,300 in the red. And this is from Gifford. Gifford Grade School Board members will vote on a tentative fiscal year 2020 budget that is $116,300 in the red. Estimated revenue was placed at $2,070,199, while anticipated expenditures are at $2,186,499. The board reviewed the numbers at last week's monthly meeting. The public can comment on the proposed budget at a hearing set for 5:25 p.m. Wednesday, September 25th at the school. It will precede the monthly meeting, which begins at 6 p.m. Superintendent Principal Jay Smith said the reason the debt service shows a negative is because we had a hefty amount in there. The auditors recommended I move my 1% sales tax and put it in Fund 60, which is capital projects. The board learned current enrollment is 170 students, down from 184 last year. By grade, the numbers include kindergarten 19, first grade 11, second grade 20, third grade 16, fourth grade 25, fifth grade 21, sixth grade 18, seventh grade 24, and eighth grade 16. In other business, the board also learned that the audit was completed and the results should be available for the September board meeting. They learned work on the parking lot had been completed by better paving. They learned that Duden and Silver had replaced the A-coil and condenser unit for the school's walk-in cooler. They learned a section of tile on the school grounds had collapsed and was replaced. They approved the resignation of Jennifer Nugent as a student council sponsor and the hiring of Sandy Bairns as her successor. And approved the following: the hiring of Angela Kelly as National Junior Honor Society sponsor, Robin Clements as volunteer girls basketball coach, and Kathy Dufan as bus driver pending licensure. And from the Thomasboro School Board, board faces some difficult decisions. $100,000 deficit in education fund. This was written by Christine Walsh. The Thomasboro School Board faces some tough decisions in the coming months. Superintendent Bonnie MacArthur told the board last week that Vincent Gallo, principal consultant for finance and business services at the Illinois State Board of Education, told her the district cannot continue to operate with a $100,000 deficit in its education fund. That fund includes teacher salaries, mineral materials, and supplies. Gallo offered several options for the board: a referendum to be placed on the ballot, selling bonds, making budget cuts, or a combination thereof. MacArthur will meet with Gallo again in October and said she should have projections then that will help in making decisions. Part of the reason for the deficit has been an increase in special education costs. 25 out of 138 of the school students, or about 18%, are receiving special education services, and an additional special education teacher has been hired. That cost has also increased transportation costs, MacArthur said. In other business, MacArthur reported that while a number of students meeting or exceeding standards on the Illinois Assessment of Readiness increased by 1% over the previous year, the school saw a 24% drop in students meeting or exceeding standards of the Illinois Science Assessment. In last year's third grade class, 47% of students were receiving special education services. Although those students may be given special accommodations, such as a longer time period for completing the tests, the questions on the test are the same. This was one day and is not a true reflection of Thomasboro Grade School, Board President Jane Sprandel said, noting that a number of situational factors can affect students' test performance on any given day. I think our benchmark MAP testing would show a very different picture, MacArthur said. And a couple of sports articles. Rantoul Eagles look to avenge last season's 52-28 week one loss to Prairie Central by Ryan Birch. The Rantoul Eagles have not made the playoffs since 2005. If the 2019 version of the Eagles wants to break that streak, it will probably have to start with a win on Friday at Prairie Central. The Eagles are opening against the Hawks for a third year straight. Last year, the Hawks came away with a 52-28 victory to start off the 2018 season. Prairie Central has a new head coach, but Rantoul head coach Tom Hess expects more of the same from the Hawks. They have a new coach, but he was on the staff last year. I expect them to be the same disciplined, hard-nosed team that is going to run the ball a lot, Hess said. The Rantoul fans got their first look at the 2019 Eagles during Friday night's meet, the Eagles kickoff night. Hess said the boys enjoyed a chance to play in front of the fans. It felt good for the boys to play in front of their parents and friends, and there was a great turnout, Hess said. Hess said not only was it great for the players, it was also fun for the coaches. It was a great event, it was productive and injury-free, Hess said. With their sights set on Friday night, Hess knows the players could be nervous. They have used the experience throughout the summer, stuck to their assignment, and fly to the ball, Hess said. After a grueling summer, Hess is eager to see his team under the Friday night lights for the first time. We're excited to play a real football game. We can't wait to see what they can do. The Eagles went 2-7 in 2018, losing close games to St. Thomas More, Illinois Valley Central, and Unity. The Eagles' 2019 schedule is filled with all 9 Illinois Prairie Conference foes. The IPC includes the 2018 3A state champions, Monticello Sages, who the Eagles face in Week 4. And looking at Fisher. Coming off a 16-2-1 2018 record, the Fisher GCMS soccer team is primed and ready for another big season. The Bunnies head coach, Robert Dinkins, said there is no pressure to fulfill last year's expectations. 2018 was amazing, even though it didn't end the way we wanted it to. Every year is going to be different in my eyes, and we have to make this team the best it can be. I believe pressure is made up in someone's mind if they aren't prepared. We will be prepared, so there's no pressure. We just need to perform to the best of this 2019 team. It's a different team, but the same dreams, Dinkins said. When two schools get together and form one team, there can be chemistry issues, but Dinkins said that this is not the case with this team. Last season, they really played for each other, and I can see the same traits with this team. It also helps that a lot of team gets together on the weekends to spend time with each other from the two towns. It really is a fantastic group of young men and women, Dinkins said. The Bunnies do have some returning players from last year's magical squad. Ethan Casper is a 4-year starter and an all-area keeper. We have a lot of returning juniors that gave us big minutes last season, but right now we have a lot of new faces fighting for positions or even challenging some of the starters from last season. I'm excited to see what this group can do this season and how they come together. The Bunnies did graduate a big-time player from last year's team in Caleb Blyke. Blyke is starting his college career at Milliken and playing on the soccer team. Caleb is going to do great things there in his years to come, and I'm very excited to watch him at the next level, Dinkins said. The Bunnies kick off the 2019 season this week, which includes a home game against Olympia on Thursday. And under Soapbox Derby Racing, the Ostrander family is retiring from racing. They won 8 world championships and titles over 16 years of competition. After 16 years of racing in the All-American Soapbox Derby, Mark and Joshua Ostrander of the Ostrander Racing Team from Rantoul have participated in the family's final First Energy All-American Soapbox Derby World Championship. Introduced to the sport by a simple phone call in 2003 from Rantoul's Christian Life Church to race their stock car, Mark Ostrander won the East Central Illinois Soapbox Derby, local race in the stock division. After being eliminated in the first round of 2003 AASBD's Local Stock World Championship, the Ostrander family decided to take part in Soapbox Derby Rally Racing to try a couple of races and see how racing would work. Joshua was the first driver in Derby history to win a local challenge race and a rally challenge race. He raced in 561 career races with 165 career wins and 483 top 8 races. Mark and Joshua have raced a combined 954 Soapbox Derby races with 283 career wins, achieving a nearly 30% win rate and 820 career top 8 finishes. That's all we have time for today. I hope you have a great holiday weekend, and we will be back with you next week.